Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, I love this Eastbound and Down. That is my favorite soul.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal near shot there.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads contemplate whether SummerSlam will emanate from a beach, from a boat, from Bridlington, or from the back of Vince's house, baby, I don't know. We are here via our Iger Pro powered DeLorean, contemplating which fancy location Monday Night Raw at the height of the new generation era will emanate from this week. Will it be Poughkeepsie? Will it be Utica? Will it be Backwater Nowhere? The possibilities are endless. And who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell from Isolation Station 24601. I am here with the bear in the big blue barcade, the locked down head pen of Cultaholic, Titan Shrugged himself. If you were to offer the head pen of Cultaholic a pencil, chances are he would put that pencil into a local lockdown, basically meaning he would shove it up your bum, because he needs a pen, because he gets it right every time. He is Justin Henry, and he is off of America.
Tom, this is a very somber episode of Monday Night Raw.
It is?
Yes, the thing that we were hoping to see at Survivor Series came to pass, but unfortunately, it was not meant to last.
Oh, mate, it is a tough pill to take, this particular episode.
Yes, it's it bothered me 25 and a half years ago, and it still bothers me now. This is the turn for the worse.
You know what? We will lament on this particular thing as we get into the episode. So this, if you've not heard this before, is where Justin Henry, writer from Cultaholic, among other things. Have you had a good week, by the way, Justin?
I have had a pretty good week, other than trying to dodge the humidity that is threatening to consume the non-cool areas of the United States.
How are you dodging humidity?
By laying in front of my air conditioner and not giving a damn otherwise.
That's nice. I don't know whether you can hear it. I have a fan on in this very room because the spare room slash the off the site B of Cultaholic, as it's now become, just becomes a sweatbox during a day like today, the hottest day of the calendar year in the UK. And yay! Spoiler, it's my only one. So I get it as a fellow humidity dodger. So whilst Justin is dodging humidity, we are chronologically critiquing, thank you OSW Review, every single episode of Monday Night Raw from its very beginning until its bitter end, or one or both of our deaths. We have just had Survivor Series 1994. Just lamenting on Survivor Series 94 for a moment, Justin. Was the show as bad as you thought it was going to be?
It was actually slightly worse because it was boring.
That's the thing, isn't it? It's a long show with only like five or six matches, but God, it done half drag.
I wondered for a while what was the worst show for 94, whether it was Rumble or Survivor Series. I mean, because Mania was the best show, obviously. Then I would probably say SummerSlam was second, Taker notwithstanding. I put King of the Ring third because of our Donovan surreal commentary. But it had enough good action on there to kind of justify it being a decent enough show. So it came down to Rumble and Survivor Series for worst of the year. And at least the Rumble had that great Quebecers Hearts match, which that counts for something. Survivor Series had pretty much nothing of that quality. In fact, it had some stuff that they even detracted, including the god-awful Lawler's Team Doinks Team match, and the possibly worst ending to their Bad Guys Teamsters match. And it never really recovered.
It really didn't. Despite the particular flavor of that particular Survivor Series, it is part of an incredibly busy 7 days in the life of the World Wrestling Federation. So the Monday before we had the final episode of Raw that took us into Survivor Series. Survivor Series happened very strangely on a Wednesday this week. So we had Survivor Series. You can listen back to myself, Justin, and Matthew Gregg do talk along, walk along, watch along commentary for Survivor Series. It was a stroll along, if nothing else. You can listen to that on the Cultaholic podcast feed right now. And then 24 hours removed from that episode, on that Survivor Series pay-per-view, we had a live event from Madison Square Garden.
Not 24 hours, 72 hours.
72 hours, I shall run up that again. 72 hours removed from Survivor Series, we had an event emanating from Madison Square Garden. 7,300 people there to watch a night that would actually go down in infamy. I've got the card in front of me, Justin. Shall we run through the card for that particular night?
Sure. I love a garden show, whether it's good or bad. There's something nostalgic about it.
There always is something special about a garden show, and this one in particular. Mm-hmm. The Bushwhackers beat Well Done in the opener. Welcome to WWF. Well Done. We haven't really seen them on TV that much, if at all, yet, have we?
No, that's why we haven't quit yet.
Yeah. That time is coming. Aldo Montoya was in action. He beat Quang. This is a hell of a show already.
Just Incredible versus Savio Vega in what was sadly not a mask versus mask match, in which the winner and loser both unmasked.
No, they would sadly keep their masks on for a little while longer. The Head Shrinkers, Fatu and Sione, beat the Executioners. Executioner 1 and 2, obviously. King Kong Bundy and the British Bulldog, they fought to a double countout.
Two big you got to protect both of them.
Yeah, you got to keep Bundy strong. We had a WWF Championship match next. More on that in a moment. That wasn't the main event. Intercontinental title was on the line with Razor Ramon successfully defending against Jeff Jarrett. Mabel defeated Pierre from the Quebecers. Mm. And in the main event, The Undertaker finally got a piece of IRS and pretty soundly beat him to send everybody home happy. But the thing that everybody is talking
Hang on. Before you get to that, I have to read from this description of that match from Graham Cawthon's History of WWE website, which is now Richard Land's History of WWE website. He says here, and I'm quoting verbatim, "The Undertaker pinned IRS with the Tombstone in 8:06 after catching IRS in midair. I refuse to believe that."
How that mid IRS was the air is the question I want to know.
Well, is there any other part of the air besides the mid part? I mean, George Carlin once pointed that out. But IRS doing anything, you know, acrobatic, I like even in video games when he comes off the top rope, I refuse to believe that it's realistic.
No, unless it was a cross body.
IRS is going for the spider walk and then sprung into the air and like a handspring. Then Taker called him.
I think that's what happened. I'm sure the website question will have some notes about not so much a lot of the other incidental matches in this particular show, but match five from this particular night, it lives in infamy. It was Bob Backlund walking into Madison Square Garden as WWF champion, the place where he lost that coveted belt back in the 80s. It felt right that he was returning as the WWF champion. He stood across from the challenger, was meant to be Bret the Hitman Hart, but still injured from Survivor Series, wasn't able to make it. So stepping in to place was the man that Jack Tunney deemed the top contender for the WWF Championship, that being Big Daddy Cool Diesel, the man who had had a sensational breakup with Shawn Michaels just a couple of days before at Survivor Series, consequently the tag team titles that he held being stripped from him as well. And it was in that match that Bob Backlund sized up Big Daddy Cool. The bell sounded, boot to the guts, jackknife powerbomb, 1, 2, 3, in 8 seconds, Big Daddy Cool Diesel becomes the World Wrestling Federation champion and becomes the man that will be known as the captain, the leader of the new generation here on in.
Well, two things to note here. One, history was made in another sense when Kevin Nash, via this victory, became the first man to win the Triple Crown within one calendar year, because he won the Intercontinental belt in April and won the tag belts in August. So this is a new feat that has never been done before.
Mm.
And something that I noticed a long time ago about how this was handled, that I don't think is commonly discussed, but I'm going to point it out here. If you go back a decade ago, when Hogan became the face of the company, when he beat the Iron Sheik for the title, consider this. For that to happen, a valiant babyface champion lost his world title, in this case Bob Backlund, lost his world title via a towel-related stoppage to a heel champion who transitioned the belt onto the face of the new generation at Madison Square Garden, that being Hulk Hogan, via the Iron Sheik. 11 years later, a valiant babyface champion loses the belt via a towel-related stoppage, Bret Hart, to a heel champion, Bob Backlund, who transitioned the belt at Madison Square Garden to the face of new generation, Diesel.
Wow. That had to be coincidental.
No, I think that was design.
Oh, wow.
They were going for the same parallel, but they never really expounded on it, and I'm not sure anyone really noticed, other than the whole, oh, they're trying to make Diesel into Hogan, which, I mean, that was overt.
Yeah.
Yes, that was
never even acknowledged, I don't think, on TV. That's quite a cool little storyline.
Well, they're not going to say, hey, Diesel's the next Hogan when crowds are down. And
that's true.
You don't want you don't want that comparison to be so open.
You don't want to remind them of Hogan.
You don't want to show the big crowds, Pontiac Silverdome, all that stuff, and here's Diesel working at the Frog Balls Armory in, Backwoods, Mississippi or something.
That's true, actually. That's a great observation. Great observation. Love that. Dave Meltzer mm-hmm. made some observations on this, too, from the Wrestling Observer.
I did.
You sure did, Dave. I'm going to quote this for you. Diesel, Kevin Nash, became the latest attempt to recreate a Hulk Hogan character by capturing the WWF title from Bob Backlund in just 8 seconds with a jackknife on the 26th of 11th in Madison Square Garden. The title switch came 3 days after Survivor Series, where Bob had won the title from Bret Hart, and Diesel had turned babyface on partner Shawn Michaels. The quickie title change was largely given away to anyone who could read between the lines on television on Saturday, both nationally and locally in the New York market. On USA Network's WWF Mania show, it was announced there would be a title match between Backlund and Diesel, replacing the injured Bret Hart at the Garden, and that the WWF would open its 900 number for the live commentary of the match, starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. In the New York market, the title change was telegraphed even deeper by announcing that the match was no DQ, no countout, and no submissions, thereby rendering Backlund's chicken wing useless. Backlund also did an interview for the New York market, complaining he had trained to wrestle Bret Hart and not Diesel. At the Garden, before a crowd estimated at 7,300, announcer Howard Finkel made the announcement of the match, but stated in a tease that it would be a non-title match, and then exuberantly corrected himself after a supposed change of plans given to him by agent Rene Goulet, aka Wurzel. Earlier in the show, Backlund did a live interview to a chorus of heavy boos, claiming that he'd be a much better moral leader than Bret Hart, while fans chanted for both Hart and Diesel. The match itself was short, as it needed to be, because of who was in there, with all the fireworks adding to the huge crowd reaction. reaction to the title change. Later in the show, Diesel came out to thank the fans amid another barrage of fireworks, and he was called the leader of the new generation on Monday Night Raw, live on the 28th of November, the show we're talking about today.
Boy, they're really pushing this, like, extremely hard, aren't they?
They are a little bit. You seemed quite perplexed about the no submissions element of the match.
I mean, it makes no sense from the standpoint of, all right, let's say Backlund breaks Diesel's arm, and Backlund puts him in a chicken wing, and Diesel's like, I can't take it anymore, I give up. Like, I can't do anything about it. That's not how this works.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just like you can't stop the match, because it's like if you submit, it's over. Except one exception is, you know, last man standing match, or a match that ends with, like, cage match, ladder match, whatever, that ends with a different kind of finish. But if you're going for an actual fall here, then why would submissions be outlawed?
It's a good question. And I guess it's that thing of just sort of really hammering home that this is Diesel's night. And which is a weird thing. You could have still done all that without having to put that caveat in there. It's WWF tend to have a history, and that's something they do still today, of really beating a drum very heavily when they don't really need to.
Yeah, and quick side note, I'm going through this garden card real fast, and I noticed that Headshrinkers Executioners match, mm-hmm. which I'm assuming is just Barbarian and Fatu versus Gil and Hardy under masks. It went almost 13 minutes.
Wow.
It was the third longest match of the show.
Why give them, of all the matches on there, it's funny how you give them the match.
Correction, second longest match of the show behind Jarrett and Razor.
That's ridiculous.
I wish I could have been at this show just to see what it was like. It sounds amazing.
Are you aware of why Bob Backlund was angry after the show?
In real life, or?
In real life.
I do not know.
So this comes from the Something to Wrestle With. Sorry, Something to Wrestle With, Bruce Pritchard. Bruce shed a little light on this particular night. And the subsequent house show tours, which saw Diesel versus Backlund a few more times. Those matches all ended with Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett running out and subsequently getting jackknife powerbombs to send the fans home happy. This happened because Bob Backlund, following taking a jackhammer on the night in Madison Square Garden... Sorry, jackknife.
Or jackknife.
Jackhammer, that's the one.
That'd be amazing.
Oh, Christ, could you imagine? That'd be stunning. Many years before. Jack
Knight. Diesel.
Then Backlund hit a spear. Oh, yes, please. So if I've said jackhammer, assume I said jackknife. Let's not be fools about this. Not you, Justin. Mm. You listening. Owen and Jeff would get battered with jackknives. This is because Backlund took the jackknife at Madison Square Garden, landed badly, went to Vince and said, I ain't taking one of them again. No, absolutely not. Just point blank refused to take another jackknife powerbomb. But Vince was adamant that, no, this is Diesel's finisher. We need to get this over. But we've got this run with Backlund. So that was the workaround, sending Owen and Jarrett out to save Bob Backlund. But in truth, they were there so the crowd could see this amazing feat of strength from Diesel hitting them with the powerbomb.
Should have sent Bundy in there.
That would have been incredible.
Come on, Hogan slammed Andre, and you're the new Hogan, so come on, get him up there.
come on then, Bundy the Andre, get amongst it. First time round, because I wasn't a fan at this point, I'd fallen off the radar at this point. What was your feelings first time round to Diesel becoming the leader of the new generation, Justin?
I really didn't even see it coming. I found out on that Sunday morning, because they announced it on Action Zone. I wasn't watching. My brother came in and told me. I'm like, because I didn't even know that he had turned face at that point. Like I knew him and Sean had the falling out, but it was all so soon, and I hadn't really processed it. I was too busy still digesting Thanksgiving dinner from 3 days earlier, and it was just like, wait, he's the champion? That doesn't make any sense. But yeah, it was just weird because here's Diesel coming out on Raw. We'll see in a little bit with the belt, so it's like you got. You better get used to it, because this is where they're going with it. And it all just seemed so sudden and soon.
It just, yeah, you're right. It just seemed very strange to Like this is me looking back at it. It's the fact that on Monday Night Raw, sort of less than 7 days ago, you had Diesel in there with Shawn Michaels, and there was nothing that gave you that indicator that maybe Diesel's about to get a big old push here. You never got that vibe at all.
Yeah, it's just, you know, strike while the iron is vaguely red, I guess.
And that they did. And this brings us to tonight's episode of Raw. But before we get into tonight's episode of Raw, just to bring it down a touch, I think it's worth noting, because we always like to look at the entire wrestling scene at this point. And this is a guy who maybe was not a part of WWF, but was still a really important part of the wrestling landscape. You know who I'm going to start talking about, don't you, Justin?
Yes, I believe you're going to... I believe this to be the death of one Art Barr.
Indeed. November 23rd, 1994, Art Barr, a.k.a. Love Machine, passed away apparently in his sleep the day before Thanksgiving. This comes from the Wrestling Observer. Art Barr, after getting his Monday paycheck, flew back from Mexico City on Tuesday to pick up his 5-year-old son, Dexter, who spent the weekend with his mother. The next day, his mother tried to call him throughout the day. When there was continually no answer, she drove to the house. Between 4 and 5 p.m., she knocked on the door and there was no answer. She went to the bedroom window to see Art and Dexter both asleep on the waterbed. She pounded on the window, which woke Dexter up, who let her in. She then noticed that Art wasn't in a good way and she couldn't wake him up, so she dialed 911, but when medical teams arrived, they pronounced him dead, believing he had been dead anywhere from 6 to 24 hours. Lane County Coroner Frank Ratty couldn't determine a cause of death following an autopsy that wasn't completed until the following Monday. Although it was heavily reported in the Mexican and Spanish language media the day after his death that the cause was a brain aneurysm, which was one of the several first day theories, the autopsy ruled that out. Also ruled out was foul play, a ring injury, or any lingering effects from a ring injury. There was no trauma to the body, no internal organ issues or deficiencies, no sign of a heart attack, organ damage, internal bleeding, or stroke, or cancer. Nothing visually obvious. He had been taking some sleeping pills the night before to help him sleep. He'd had some Halcyons and possibly some Valium, although there was no indication that this was an overdose either. This was a very strange death that we will surely hear more about as time goes on. Conan comments on the death of Art Barr, saying he was very high on life. They met back in 1990. They opened the door for him to come into Mexico with EMLL the following year, and had come to refer to him in recent months as our Ric Flair, which is an amazing honor for Love Machine. He'd been given a second opportunity, says Conan, in wrestling, and had made the most of it. He just came off a 5-star match on a pay-per-view that hadn't even hit its potential. Mm-hmm. This is just terrible news. Funeral set for the 30th of November. What are your thoughts, memories of this particular time, and of course of Art Barr?
I didn't know a whole lot about Art Barr before his passing, except that he had a brief run in WCW as the Juicer, which is a play on Beetlejuice. He had the face paint and like the whole rigmarole of shooting. It was like a very fantastical base gimmick, but he didn't really last very long. He did have some legal issues at the time that really did cloud his career in a negative way. I won't go into it here, but it's a very sordid and somewhat disturbing story. But the positives of Art Barr were that he was a tremendous performer. He was a tag team partner of Eddie Guerrero's. They were known as Los Gringos Locos, and they were basically like the top heels of AAA at the time. They had just come off that pay-per-view match against El Hijo del Santo and Octagon in the double mask versus double hair match, 2 out of 3 falls, that I know for sure is on one of Eddie's DVDs. It is one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen. It's just so heated. Barr and Guerrero do everything they can to get the crowd to hate them. I know this is pretty bad, but it was meant for heel heat. They would mock the fans in Mexico, or fans of Mexican descent by mock swimming with their arms. I mean, you do like doing the backstroke and the forward stroke of border jumping. Right. They were just like taunting them with that, and that was part of their shtick. And I just realized they were associates with a Luis Piccoli. Within 11 years, all three of them would be gone. That's really morbid.
Gosh, that really is. But as you said there, I think that It's one thing to lament on a passing, but it's another to celebrate it. And I think that if you do want to find out more about Love Machine Art Bar, that match, Eddie Guerrero at AAA when Worlds Collide, that tag team match, 5-star match. Is it on the network? I don't think it is it?
I don't think it is, unless it's like a hidden gem or some more like Eddie's collections or whatever. Because otherwise, when Worlds Collide is not on there, I wish it was, because God, I'd watch the hell out of that show if it was on there. It was a transcendent night for pro wrestling. It was a AAA show in California that drew a really good crowd, had really great matches, and it proved that something outside of the whole sports entertainment spectacle could do good in the United States. So it was kind of like a switch being flipped moment where you realize, hey, there is more to it than the whole Hulkamania style, and it can thrive in the United States. And Art Bar was part of that revolution, and in fact, him and Eddie were going to come to ECW at one point as a tag team, which Eddie ended up coming alone after Art died, and he started using the Frog Splash as a tribute to Art, which is why he did the move, because that was Art's finisher. And Eddie maintains his book that Art's version was way better than his, so take that for what it's worth.
That match in itself is available on YouTube. I've just had a quick check to see if it's there, and it is. In its entirety, you can watch it on YouTube. There's a 27-minute video file, and it is 100% worth your time to watch.
And if you just look like there's primitive things called DVDs, if you do have Eddie's Cheating Death Stealing Life DVD, it's definitely on there.
Amazing. We love and remember the life and times of Art Bar, who left us in this particular week in wrestling. It was also in this particular week that we had Monday Night Raw. Let's crack on with Raw this week. Justin, where and when are we for Monday Night Raw this week, sir?
Well, there are definitely no matches of that caliber on this show. Let's put it
what?
That way.
Surely not.
I know I'm as stunned as you are. It is Monday, November 28th, 1994. We are live-ish from the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York. Good building, but we're heading into dark times.
We really
wait till
are
you see the dark. Arena for the next. Wait till you see the arena for the next set of tapings.
I shouldn't laugh.
Basically, it's basically if the Performance Center had had the production value of your high school drama club.
God, oh, this is a good time. This is good time. So talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, my friend.
Well, we get these stills from Survivor Series, because back then we couldn't show a video. I still think they avoid showing a video on the TV show if you can, as encouragement to buy the replay or whatever. It's back on Triumph. You get Diesel's face turn footage. They splice it all together. Diesel wins the belt. We get to watch this cool headbang celebration when he beats Backlund, where he does like this weird squat and then just like throttles his head back and forth like he's War Horse or something. And Vince declares Big Daddy Cole became the leader of the new World Wrestling Federation generation.
He was really, really like pushing that full on gravelly Vince voice to get us started.
They're really making some assumptions here. It's like you walk up to a demo cart at a supermarket, and you're like putting out free samples and stuff. And as you say, "Oh, that looks pretty good," before you even finish the sentence, the person who's cutting the food up is just shoving it in your mouth.
Eat this!
You're like, you don't even have time to like process what you're looking at, what it could be, what it could taste like. No, have it all.
Because you got to remember that watching, like, you wouldn't have had, unless you had like friends who lived in New York or were at the show or whatever, this wouldn't have been like worldwide news by this point.
This is like an arranged marriage that just happened overnight.
Yeah, it's so sudden, and you know, it's not unlike a local lockdown in the UK in the sense that it comes out of nowhere. No one expects it. They're very vague on exactly what is happening, and we're just sort of told to crack on with it.
Nobody expects the Diesel Inquisition.
Nobody did expect the Diesel Inquisition.
Now I see Kevin Nash singing that song, John.
Here he goes, John. John. John is on coffee.
Nashamata.
Look after him. Buy John coffees.
Wait, John joining New Day? When did this happen?
Yes. John, could you please also have yourself as part of the New Day?
But John Bobby does one hell of a Marlon Brando impression, as he demonstrated on Twitter last week.
Oh, he does, doesn't he?
It's uncanny.
It's like Brando was in the room. God love you, at John Ivy on Twitter.
Colonel Kurtz, Photoshop master. So we got Vincent Lawler on commentary this week. Vince has the audacity to bring up that match from last week involving the clowns and the kings, and so just put it past us. This week we have Owen Hart in action. We have a Diesel interview. We have Adam Bomb versus IRS, which Vince goes, "What a matchup!" Like he's trying to convince himself.
Of all the stuff he lists in that opening bit, he is so excited about the one bit I am the least bothered about.
It's, well, I mean, that's our future match on this live show coming out of Survivor Series. Say one thing about Vince. He knew his audience.
He really did. He really does. I know. You don't know what you like. I know what you like.
I've got my finger on your pulse. That's a coffee table. Oh.
It's a pulse to me.
So we start off with what's probably the best match of the show, actually. Owen Hart versus John Paul. Our old friend John Paul.
John's great here.
Underrated enhancement talent, John Paul, who seemed to have a lot of abilities, but just they never did anything with him besides make him lose to Owen Hart and Rick Martel a lot. That's how long John Paul's been around. He was here when friggin' Rick Martel was wrestling for the company.
He's been here forever, like forever ago. He's been here forever. And he's just always good. Like, every time he's in the ring, like, he's crisp. He looks fresh. Like, it's almost the point where you go, was there ever the conversation about John Paul being more than just already in the ring, John Paul?
He could have been Aldo Montoya.
Yeah. He could have been. You know what? He could have been. And he would have done it fine. But yeah. I guess, yeah. Their one jobber push per year quota has been filled by the pushing of PJ Walker.
Well, there's always next year for Aldo Paul Toya.
No, it's Barry next year. It's Horowitz next
that's
year.
That's true, yes. And in the 90s. You're right. 96, who was the jobber du jour that got the push? Anybody like
Hunter
think
Hearst
of?
Helmsley, if I remember correctly.
That's right. Well, he jobbered for 5 straight months, but there's a story behind that.
There is indeed.
I notice Owen enters alone here. No Neidhart.
Yeah, I tried to look up this, and I don't think Neidhart's done. At least if he is, he's not done yet.
Yeah, we're getting closer, though. We are getting closer.
I think, yeah, the bloom is off the rose with the idea of bringing Neidhart in. I think they've, at this point, realized he has actually got a lot to offer our company right now.
No, and considering who they're keeping around, that's really saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Owen's got the towel with him. So he and Breastfeed has gone over a year now.
It has, isn't it? They just kept it ticking over. And do you know what? There's worse feuds to keep ticking over.
I got to say, I love those shadow projections they put on the mat for the wrestlers as part of the production. Because Owens is the playing card version of him as the King of Hearts. That was a nice touch.
I love that. I like that a lot.
It's nice wrestling in this match as I realized that John Paul has late career Tracy Smothers hair. Which is a nice look, actually. Hope Tracy's doing well these days.
Yeah, last I heard he was not in a bad way, but not in a great way, but he was on the mend.
Well, that's good. Hopefully Tracy keeps getting better. So Brett calls in during this match. Because if there's one thing that will electrify a show, it's Bret Hart on the telephone. He says he's sore, he has some stretched ligaments, but he'll return around the new year. He should have added, until then, I'm sure business won't tank with Nash on top. But unfortunately, they don't do that. He doesn't say that.
It would have been too. It would have been too funny. It would have been a line that would have been clipped forever.
And then Brett actually plugs the encore of Survivor Series. He says, I was like, well, I haven't seen what Owen did to me yet, but I'm going to watch it tomorrow night on the encore to see fully what Owen's actions. That's a savvy yet ham-handed plug at the same time.
It really is. I bet he'd be expected to pay for it at this point as well.
I wish there was a network where you could just watch it for free the next day since you're already paying for the service.
Yeah, actually, yeah, the next time we'd have this kind of ham-fisted type of plugs would be Triple H coming out going, $9.99 on episodes of Monday Night Raw in the future.
Oh, yeah. That's all his company knows is ham-handed, but I guess that's part of its charm. Brett says you gotta get back on your horse and ride on. It's like something Adam Page would say.
It's a Lonesome Dove reference, isn't it?
I thought it was just referencing the fact that Adam Page would one day be a future wrestling star for AEW.
I think it was that. I think it's more likely to be that than a Lonesome Dove reference.
I mean, Hitman, Hangman, they're kindred spirits.
Hit-hang, yes. That's very true. I'm just thinking Adam Page would have been good in Lonesome Dove.
I actually watched some of those Lonesome Dove clips recently on YouTube because I knew for years he was on that show, but I was too young to be into a Western or whatever. Mm. So I never saw it in its time. So I'm like, oh yeah, Brett did that. Let me see if it's on YouTube anywhere. And there's a whole reel someone put up of Brett's scenes from Lonesome Dove. And there's something. like I'm not saying they're Hogan and No Holds Barred bad, but it's very direct-to-video acting. Bret Hart will never be confused with Daniel Day-Lewis, let's put it that way.
No, very, very, very much not likely.
That bitch, my left foot. So Paul makes a comeback. It gets huge cheers from this still hot crowd because it's still very early in this taping, obviously. Brett quotes General MacArthur at the Envy saying, "I shall return," which Vince calls Vince to laugh for some reason.
Yeah, and then Vince goes, Bret Hart in high spirits. He sounded miserable on this call. Like, he sounded... I wonder whether it is that Bret Hart just doesn't translate well on phone calls. Because he just sounded fed up here. I didn't get the vibe that Bret was in high spirits at all.
Well, you gotta understand, well, Bret's a very dour person, even when he's happy, because that's how he always came off in promos. Hmm. And plus, it is late November in Canada, and there's no calls for celebration at that point anyway. Another long Calgary winter coming. So Owen wins via the sharpshooter, and then Owen throws a towel on him afterwards, which is kind of funny.
That was a good little touch. I don't want this to be part of the shtick for Owen going forward.
I mean, it's not as funny as when he put the glasses on somebody and then snap them back. It's pretty funny nonetheless. It's those little touches that make it.
It really is.
So we get this plug for the Encore of Survivor Series, which is apparently, according to the voiceover, the most surprising Survivor Series ever.
I mean, you can't call it the best, you can't call it the most exciting, but you have to use some sort of positive affirmation for it. So, I guess surprising? I guess I wasn't expecting Martha to throw the towel in, so that is technically a surprise. Or Helen, sorry. Why do I keep getting Martha and Helen mixed up? That'd be a nightmare on the wedding night.
My goodness.
Oh, easy, Tiger. I wasn't expecting Bundy to pin Lex Luger clean as a whistle. I guess that's surprising too.
It certainly is, and I think the most surprising part is that I actually ordered the show in 1994. No, I was actually looking forward to it. What I thought was interesting about this plug for the encore is that all the commentary sound bites are from Monsoon, none from Vince. It's as if he's distancing himself from the show.
He's stepping away, isn't he? He's disappearing from that altogether.
Here, Gino, you fall on this sword.
Will you fall on this sword?
Will you be serious? I miss Heenan at this point.
Yeah, it's missing that element in it. It's like if you like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, it's having one of those major components missing and being replaced with Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I will say, though, it is interesting that this past Survivor Series was the first pay-per-view in company history that neither Hogan nor Savage appeared on.
Is it really? Yeah. I suppose it wouldn't. Yeah. Neither. Oh, gosh, that's true. That's a worry.
It really is a new generation, is it not? So speaking of new generation, Adam Bomb versus IRS.
Oh, this screams new generation.
We kick off with something appropriate for this time, which is Vince wishing Randy Newman a happy birthday. Clearly the bar is set very low here for witticism. Although Vince did get Conway to do Newman to do Rob Conway's theme later on, or something close to it.
Do they?
Well, no, it's just remember Rob Conway's theme, that Just Look At Me song?
Yeah, just ain't nice sight to see.
It's just like the old Randy Newman joke from Family Guy.
It is, isn't it?
Everything he sees, send an IRS to the ring, he's carrying the briefcase. It's like that kind of.
I never really thought that Rob Conway's music is very Randy Newman.
That's how I looked at it. So, IRS comes out and he's got DiBiase with him. But it's not just those two. No, they have a third man with them, and it's not Hogan joining the NWO. It is a druid.
Yeah, so, again, did a bit of research, tried to find the identity of this druid. And whilst I don't know the identity of this one, I know that down the line, the druid will be played by Jimmy Del Rey at one point.
Well, because you... Why did the druid start rubbing himself and gyrating in front of all the fans?
I think that was the one. That was the night.
So, you have a man in suspenders and a tie. You have a man in a tuxedo tracksuit. And you have a druid.
It's a good look, isn't it?
It's like the weirdest group of Batman villains ever. I came. Although Luger driving the Batmobile would be something. And the seatbelt's too tight, Billy! Anyway. Vince informs us that Yoko's taking a dirt nap. Sounds a little callous. This is one hip crowd because we actually get the old school Irwin chant.
Yeah, I like that. Nice to see a return to that one.
There's actually life in this crowd for a little bit.
They're not a bad crowd tonight. In fact, there's a bit that I forgot to mention during the Owen Hart John Paul match, whereby as Brett was on the phone, as if the crowd knew, the crowd were chanting "We want Brett," which was beautifully timed.
Mm-hmm.
I just like
that. That was definitely fortuitous. this crowd is hot, of course. You know, by hour three, when we get to final show of this taping, I'm sure it won't be so. So nuclear. Bomb hits his slingshot clothesline early in the match, which is just done as like a regular move and not his finish. That's how you know he's going nowhere.
Yeah, so, this seems to drag this match a little bit.
But the most incredible part of this match, when Bomb hits a high cross body, goes for the cover. 1, 2. Does Iris kick out? Does he get pinned? We don't know because we've gone to commercial break. on the count of 2, 1, 2, and it fades into some ad for Fresh Dridex or something. Live TV, it's a bitch.
It really is.
Fortunately, we do have a replay of it. When we return, it turns out Iris did kick out because the match is still going.
I don't know why they choose the way they choose the matches that go long is peculiar. You mentioned yourself the longest match at MSG was Shrinkers and Executioners, and then the longest match tonight is this one. I guess it's the one which they deem to be a star-studded match.
What was it going to be, Luger versus Bert Santino going 15 minutes?
That's true. There wasn't. Really, it was slim pickings this particular week.
So it rode a bomb from a airplane to the ground? You said slim pickings.
Hey, there you go.
See, Dr. Strangelove reference.
Thought we'd drop that
John,
in there.
John, I want Vince riding the bomb out of the plane.
John, I want Vince riding Adam Bomb out of the plane.
Yes, yes, that's even more. How I learned to stop worrying and push Adam Bomb. Dr. Vince Love. So, Bomb makes a comeback. It has no heat whatsoever. This crowd's finally had enough. He goes to the top rope. Druid shoves him off. Irish with a leg drop to the back of the head, and that's the finish. Even Vince was surprised by this finish.
Just because it just seems so... just meh.
I think Bomb was in full pin-me-pay-me mode here.
He was just like, get in, get out, get it done. It very much felt like a half-hearted, half-witted effort.
Adam Bomb poses for trading card photo. So after the match, Bomb is attacked by this bizarre trio of Batman villains, as we said, and then Luger makes a save to a moderate response. Like, very lukewarm, tepid response for Lex coming out here.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. He's just been treated so badly. Like, and I'm not talking about the Lex Express, where he was given everything and just didn't care. It was just the fact that less than a week ago, Survivor Series, he's being pinned by Bundy, clean as a whistle.
Yeah. He makes a big comeback, he pins a Tonka, he's gonna pull us off, all right, from Bundy.
It's just such strange booking, where you've got this guy who is defying the odds, only to have him not defy the odds.
It's the most half-assed version of the Roman push ever.
It's like, right, for example, right, Survivor Series 03, let's spin forward. The Survivor Series match, Team Austin versus Team Bischoff, and it comes down to Shawn Michaels, Randy Orton, and Chris Jericho and Christian, and it's that survival of Shawn Michaels, like the life is ebbing away from him, but he's just hanging in there and hanging in there. Oh my God, even thinking about it, it's great. But it's Batista who turns up and powerbombs the bejesus out of Shawn Michaels that is what finishes him off. So while Shawn Michaels doesn't finish off the team, doesn't win the match, it's not for one to try in. Like, he gave it his all, but it was other shenanigans. Like, had you had Luger in that match fighting against the odds, but then had somebody else come out and attack him, say Tatanka hits him with a weapon or something, you'd have that vibe of, oh, Luger was screwed. But it was just a case of, he just ran out of steam, just got pinned, done.
Maybe the match is supposed to keep going, but then Luger just says, you know what, I've done enough.
Yeah, whatever.
Bundy, I'm effed.
Bundy, I'm effed, I don't know.
You have to carry the match. We're going to the finish. Sounds good. So, speaking of American heroes, but this one actually is an American hero, Chuck Norris, we get stills of him.
Yes.
With some great background music here. Very intrepid, very rustic Old West. Even in still form, he's animated Chuck Norris.
I want to see Chuck Norris wrestle. That's what they've made me think.
Him versus Haku, what, 20-hour draw?
Think about it, right? Think about it. Main event of WrestleMania 11 coming up is a wrestler versus a non-wrestler. Would you have been mad if it had been Bam Bam Bigelow versus Chuck Norris?
Well, during the angle, and Bigelow shoved me, would have broke both forearms.
Yeah. And that would have been worth the WrestleMania 11 on that alone.
Chuck Norris doesn't sell. So this next match is good for my heart here, because it's a battle of two ECW legends, Bob Holly and Tony DeVito.
Oh man, Bob Sparkplug Holly, he's now Sparkplug Holly. He's gone to Vince McMahon and said, don't I don't want to be Thurman Plug. It's a crap name. And Vince, to his, in all his fairness, has gone, all right, what do you want to be? And then he picked Bob Holly.
Well, keep in mind, Bob probably had his fist balled up when he said it.
And Vince's head against the wall.
We could talk
about
this. Wouldn't surprise me. See, we came to an agreement. I said, I want to be Bob Holly, and he wanted to live. So eventually we came to an understanding.
I like Thurman Plug, and Angry Bob Holly liked Bob Holly. So we compromised, and he's now Bob Holly.
It's a hell of a negotiation. Bob Holly should be my agent.
More than likely, he definitely should be.
I want $5 million a year. Vincent, they want to pay me $5 million a year. All right, let me get my agent in here. And Bob Holly, all of a sudden, I own the company. And it's funny how that works. So, we learned during this match that Bob's going to be in a race this weekend called the Snowball Derby.
Or as it was called, the Powerpuff Derby.
Pretty sure that's not how that works.
That was what Jerry Lawler called it.
Well, yes. Well, Lawler's making the obvious joke. Although he did make me laugh during the Owen Hart, John Paul. One of the first two matches he made a joke about, I think it was like IRS, like buying toys for kids or buying kids batteries for Christmas and saying toys not included. That was kind of funny, actually.
That was good. I like that a lot.
Well, the Snowball Derby, I did some research on this because I'd never even heard of this race. It's apparently it's been run every year since 1968. And apparently in 1994, for the first time ever, a woman won the race.
Oh.
A woman named Tammy Jo Kirk. So the race was at least historic for that reason.
Well, there you go.
I can't find any info on how Bob Holly finished that race.
No, I little look, and obviously he's into his cars and all that stuff, but no news on how he did.
I'm going to assume not that well. I'm just making an assumption. I could be totally wrong. He may have come in second for all we know.
Let's just assume he won, just in case he's listening.
Yes. Sorry, Bob. So for this match, we get Holly hitting the best dropkick in the business, or one of the best dropkicks in the business. It's a decent little match. Vito gets his offense in. Vince cautions other drivers from making Bob Holly angry during. So apparently there is some credence to that story about Bob demanding a name change and Vince. Okay, yes, sir. It's like, I want the world title. If he'd just done that, he could have gotten it.
Exactly. Okay. My mic's just come off. There we go. I've had a mic malfunction. I think that was the spirit of Bob Holly doing that.
Yes. Bob took a whack at your mic. Anyway, Holly takes over at the end, hits a diving clothesline for the finish. Just a typical squash to put Bob over and to plug a race.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I like it. I like the fact that they are pushing the race that Bob Holly is in.
I mean, they kind of should do that. If you're going the whole race car driver gimmick, then you might want to plug the fact that he actually does, you know, race his car once in a while.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We have a debut vignette for a character who will be on WWF TV for the next 3.5 years, roughly. Henry Orpheus Godwin, or just Henry Godwin, or if you prefer, Hog.
Do you get it? Because pigs.
Because you see, he's a hog farmer from Bitters, Arkansas. And this is made evident by his vignette, which features a pigsty. A bunch of little pigs running around. And in his big, gruff southern accent, he tells us, he's the ugliest, meanest, nastiest hog of all. And when I get to the WWF, I'm going to be in hog heaven.
Now, Bitters, Arkansas, isn't a real place.
It isn't?
Because I Google Bitters, Arkansas, and all I get is links to Henry Godwin. So unless he's the only person that lives in Bitters, Arkansas, I don't know what to tell you.
It's an unincorporated territory in parts unknown county. I mean, it's just, what is Vince's obsession with hillbillies? And I never got it. There's always some rural blue collar guy hanging around, because Vince seems to have this infatuation with like Plowboy Wilbur and Haystacks Calhoun and Hillbilly Jim. There's always got to be something.
He's just very keen to express. I guess whether it's a dig on the audience, whether he thinks that the hillbillies will embrace the product more. I don't know.
Maybe there's a commentary on the how he feels the IQ of the audience goes. Like here's your spiritual hero.
It could very well have been that.
Guy wears bib overalls to it. The jury duty.
Would you like some details on Henry O. Godwin?
I suppose you're going to tell me anyway.
I'm going to tell you anyway, friend. This is, of course,
my guess.
Mark Canterbury, who will have a good run in WWF, as you have alluded to. He trained under George South and the Italian Stallion. I bet Stallion wasn't tapping him up for money to be dropped off at the venue.
I wouldn't mess with Henry Godwin.
Absolutely not. Before debuting, he debuted in 1989 under the name Mean Mark Canterbury, which sounds a bit like Mean Mark Callis, which I like. He very quickly formed a tag team with a man that would become a pretty much lifelong wrestling friend, Dennis Knight, who was under the name Tex Slazenger as the turn of the decade. Now, in October 92, they started with WCW, with Canterbury becoming Shanghai Pierce.
Under a mask, yes.
Mm-hmm. Dusty actually suggested the mask because Canterbury, according to Dusty, is too good looking to be a heel.
What?
He said that Canterbury's good looks could make him too likable to be a heel.
Mark Canterbury looks like Danny McBride.
Maybe Dusty had a thing for Danny McBride?
Oh, I love this Eastbound and Down. That is my favorite soul. Kenny F. Empowered. My man, Nick Patrick.
Very pretty. Very pretty. They were with WCW until 94. Pierce was forced to unmask on WCW Saturday Night after losing to Johnny B. Badd, and then he left after that.
Somebody in the crowd yelled, "It's Kenny Powers!"
Don't take his mask off! He's too pretty! Don't unmask him! You'll turn all the women against us!
Hey, it's Enrico Palazzo.
So he left in 94, started 94, and has now resurfaced in the World Wrestling Federation. Vince McMahon is keen on a big, menacing-looking guy, and Henry O. Godwin very much fits that mold. So here we are.
I need to watch Fall Brawl 93 again and watch Henry Godwin take on Ice Train.
Careful that you're not bedazzled by his good looks, though.
Who Ice Train's? I agree.
Exactly.
Ice Train's one of the guys that should have made it, but he just didn't. I can't figure out why.
There was something missing with Ice Train. I agree though. Like there was something warm about him, but it was just like a tiny little thing missing somewhere. I can't quite put my finger on.
He was fun to watch. Go back to watch him and Scott Norton team as Fire and Ice. But anyway, enough fun stuff. On to Lex Luger. Lex Luger versus Burt Centino. So we get the small child in a jumbo-sized t-shirt as Luger's flag bearer. It's like Maggie Simpson wearing that onesie. So Vince calls Luger's performance at Survivor Series, and this is a direct quote, tremendous. That's quite an editorial there. Has Luger done anything tremendous in 94 at all? Besides have a passable match with Diesel in that one role?
He didn't sell out, but he might as well have done.
Wait a year.
No, this has been a really unremarkable year for Luger. They've completely given up the ghost on Luger. And you know what? I don't blame them. I really don't. I feel like Lex Luger was given the world. And he was given the world on a plate. And he looked at them and said, it's too salty. Take it back. That's what I feel. Like, I feel like Lex Luger had the biggest opportunity within that company. And
well, you do... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, and I feel like that. I don't know whether it's a lack of talent, lack of interest, lack of care. Just squandered it.
I think it is lack of interest because you watch this match and we get the Luger formula for all enhancement talents. It's when you watch a Diesel squash match from any point this past year here, he annihilates his opponent. Mm-hmm. He goes in there, he just throws him around, ragdolls him. Boot to the face, you know, snake eyes, jackknife. The guy just gets pulverized by this powerful monster, Kevin Nash. Luger gets in there. He's putting him in hammer locks and wrist locks. And it's like, you're the muscle-bound Superman. Beat his ass.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, I might have to agree that Diesel's a better choice for champion at this point than Luger. If you're going for some sort of Hogan-esque clone, I might go with Nash over Luger just because Nash actually seemed to put some effort in. And this sounds really weird saying, because getting, you know, the whole knock on Nash that he was somehow lazy or whatever. No, Nash actually could actually squash somebody and make it look like a squash. Like, Nash understood what his role was. He was the killer, so he gave you the killer. Luger's the guy who's doing wrist manipulation while just kind of standing there, like not really knowing what to do with his shoulders. And he just, that's what you got.
Just a guy who didn't quite have the right mindset and didn't really embrace what he had going on.
He doesn't have Sting or Flair to tell him what to do.
No, I think that's it's true. I think he needs more guidance. I think it was, I don't know how much... you say that, but in 93, like, surely he was given every bit of guidance. But I did it with... But in 93, I guess, the vibe I got from watching, like, the Lex Express stuff was he couldn't be arsed. Like, he just wasn't bothered about all of this. Like, the fact that within, like, a couple of trips on the Lex Express, he decided to bin off going on the actual coach and just flew everywhere. Just, like, gave up on it so soon. And just every time you saw him, he looked fed up. Like, mate, you are being handed, like, the wrestling industry. Embrace it. Why aren't you embracing it? I'm so baffled. So this year has been a damp squib for Lex Luger. And it's, I think, a lot of it is his making.
I was watching a shoot interview yesterday with Sid Vicious for a future piece for Cultaholics. Minor spoiler there.
Oh.
And he was talking about how Lex Luger was so unfriendly backstage and was just completely aloof to everybody and everything. And just, and also Chris Jericho, one of his books talked about the first time he met Luger, was backstage at a show for WCW around 96, I guess. And he said hi to him, talked about how cool it'd be to work with him, kind of like, you know, sort of markish. And Les, he says, Les kind of just sneered at him and says, who are you?
Oh, God.
Like, this is, like, Les seems to be, like, on his own planet half the time. Based on just many stories I've heard.
Oh, man.
Like, Hogan may be a BSer, but at least he knew how to engage people.
Yeah, he was actually clued into what was happening.
Yeah, Hogan had great awareness, which is probably why he made more money than Luger.
I think that's an understatement, but absolutely, yeah. And this, again, this match is just an example of that. Like, this is Lex Luger. Like, maybe an opportunity here for Lex Luger to reinvigorate himself, but we're just watching him get, at some points, bounced around by Reno Riggins.
Or Bert Santino in this instance.
Bert Santino rather than Reno Riggins. And you know what? It's one of the... I get it. Like, on NXT, you see a lot of that. You do see like the guys come in and have somewhat prelim matches, but the guys get a shine. I'm not against that. I think it's nice to see it. But in this circumstance, like, this isn't a guy on the bubble in WWE. This is a guy who's been flown in just to showcase. So Luger is a guy that needs the rehabilitation. Luger should have just mowed through him. This should have been a new, invigorated, angry Lex Luger who could play off the idea that he's had the world in his hands and it's all slipped away. And it's like, oh my God, I'm just annoyed and I'm annoyed with everybody and myself. I need to get back. And this could have been the start of something where you just have him mow through Burt. And that didn't happen.
You can give your opponent the enhancement talent, you know, some shine, give him some offense. That's fine, but you still have to get your essence across when you make your comeback and snuff them out. And Luger's essence at this point is to just be passive. Like, but still, in spite of all that, I realize we've gone on a lot about Luger here. Three interesting things happened during this match.
Okay.
One, we learn where the Royal Rumble is going to be in Tampa. Two, Lawler discusses one of the greatest finishes to a football game ever from the day before when Dan Marino's Miami Dolphins beat the New York Jets on one of the coolest bits of trickery I've ever seen in my life. It was so simple yet. I could explain it, but you're not a football fan, unless you're fascinated by it.
Well, explain it anyway, because there'll be people listening that are football fans.
Okay, well, you know who Dan Marino is from Ace Ventura, correct?
I do indeed.
Okay, they're playing the New York Jets and they're down by 3 points late in the game. Now, I don't know how much American football you've seen, but you know how, like, are you aware that if you spike the ball as soon as it snaps, it stops the clock?
Yes.
Okay, well, so Marino's driving the Dolphins down late in the game, trying to get that tying field goal. The clock is just ticking, tick, tick, tick. He's throwing the ball. He's making plays. He's getting them in the position for the tie. And the Jets are thinking that. He's just going for the tie because since it's overtime. So after one of his players catches the ball, he's running to the line of scrimmage for the next play. And he's yelling, clock, clock, which is a signal to his teammates that he's going to spike the ball and stop the clock. Mm-hmm. So they can regroup, gather their bearings, and then run the next play, whatever that may be. However, what the Jets didn't know is that Marino was not going to spike the ball. Even though he's yelling, clock, clock. He runs up to the line of scrimmage, takes the ball. Everyone kind of just stands there like frozen in time, like, why is he spiking it? And he throws a touchdown pass right then and there to a teammate. Just completely faked them all out.
Amazing.
The Jets look like complete dupes on that play. It was wonderful.
See, that's a good story. And if you're a super football fan, that's a great story.
Look up clock play on YouTube. Clock played Dan Marino 1994.
Amazing.
And Lawler had a good go at the Jets for being so stupid on that play. It is wonderful. So that was the second interesting thing, as far because which appealed to me as a football fan. And the third was when Lex Luger went for the torture rack on Bersantino and couldn't get him up the first time around.
That was just embarrassing.
Yeah, this is Lex Luger in a nutshell, this entire match. He can't do his finish properly. He's boring otherwise. And I'm more interested in other aspects outside the match than him himself.
It just sucks. What I would say, okay, one redeeming factor of this match.
Okay.
Burt's bump off Luger's lariat, off Luger's forearm, was amazing.
Okay.
I think it was a forearm or a lariat, but Burt fell like Sonic losing his rings. Like, feet in the air, straight back. It was a good bump.
And Burt's no little guy either.
He's big boy.
He's like a slightly smaller version of a nesting doll Jeff Cobb.
Imagine him. Imagine Cobb taking a bump like that.
I could, because Jeff Cobb's very athletic.
It's true.
For as round as his body is, he can take some bumps and do some flips.
He's a force.
Certainly is. Speaking of force, we have our diesel power moment coming up. It's the big interview with the leader of the new generation. The man is gonna blast off into the next decade or leave for WWE in a year and a half, whichever comes first. He still has the all horns version of Cena at this point, which is not very babyface-ish. Just rah, rah, vroom, 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 rah.
Vince gave him a very cluttered announcement to the ring, I thought.
Do you have it verbatim? Because I didn't write it down.
It went along the lines of, ladies and gentlemen, the new Big Pop WWF champion. He's 6 foot, he's 7 billion pounds. The leader of the new WWF generation. He is the WWF champion. He is Big Daddy Cool Diesel. Just so many words running on from one another. Didn't keep it simple. Rambles. Like, so desperate to get all those key points in that he repeated one of them.
Was he salivating?
Do you know what? I got the impression that he was priapic at the time of saying it. Like, just so excited to talk about how tall and big this man was. And it was, it just felt like he was, and this whole interview is, oh, this is interesting. This is interesting, for lack of a better term. It's interesting in the way that it's not interesting.
I'm sorry, what was that?
It's interesting in the way that it's not interesting.
Well, it's true, and it is, but his joy is boundless here. It's like, as mentioned, it may have been salivation or possibly some other bodily involuntary response to the excitement he's feeling for Kevin Nash as champion.
I feel like when he walked out, he was Big Daddy Cool. But by the time he walked back, he was big.
Kids, Grandpa, and I are rolling a very sticky, chewy, caramelly, nutty. Put it away, boy! Just distracted by the flavor that he's anticipating. So he comes out. He has the corner pyro and the ceiling pyro, which is that's a lot.
I thought you were just gonna get the Rocket's red glare as well from Bulldog, because Vince loves to call it.
Yeah, I mean Bulldog should have been forced to give it up after he played dead for 10 minutes of Survivor Series.
He's still playing dead now.
Some say he's still in San Antonio. Like Milhouse at the end of the Spinal Tap concert.
John?
If John pulls it off, it'd be my favorite Photoshop ever.
John, we leave it with you, sir.
Can I, Sanford? There'll be no encore. So Diesel goes on about Sean being a glory hog. I realize here the camera is looking up at Diesel to make him seem even taller.
Oh, this is just blatant, isn't it? Just so blatant. Vince is just so excited about a tall man being champion. There's two kinds of people that get far too giddy about height, and that is Vince McMahon and people on Tinder.
There's the Evil Knievel.
Well, I mean, he's up for it as well. But, like, Vince is just, like, every chance he gets is like, oh, look how tall this guy is. Like, yeah, he's tall. We get it. It's fine. It's incredible.
So this promo from Nash is, I have to say, the big knock on Kevin Nash as champion at this point is that he was such a bland, boring babyface that all of his promos had this very basic pablum kind of feel to him. He was too cheerful. He was too sugary. This promo, like, you see Kevin, like, I'm not saying there were nerves in his eyes, but you see Kevin Nash is just uncomfortable given this kind of dialogue. This isn't who Nash is.
It doesn't suit him.
No, it doesn't. He's not Hulk Hogan. Nash is a laid-back, very dry, very funny man, no doubt about it, but his humor is delivered in a way that is understated and subtle. And that's the charm of Kevin Nash. And Nash here is trying to be like he's wearing a suit that doesn't fit him, basically.
That's a nice way to describe it. It's a suit that doesn't fit him.
It was made for a man who's 6'8" and has bulging biceps and lots of spray tan. And you put it on him and you see his socks because the pant legs are too short and it's tearing in the back because he's too tall for it, and But yeah, like it fit the other guy. He did fine. Now put it on.
It felt like, yeah, I felt like if this dialogue was delivered in Hulk Hogan's late 80s coke-fueled style cadence, this actually would have had some true gravitas to it. But just this, it, in with Kevin Nash, who is the opposite of that, he's so kicked back and chilled and subtle and sarcastic, it just felt very pedestrian. Talking about, there was one line that made me chuckle, and it was complete, and I don't know whether, I don't think it was deliberate, but like maybe he was on a different level to us, I don't know, where he was talking about how, oh, he'd been up since 4 a.m, like, ready for the opportunity, and he's walking around New York, and everybody's coming up to him, and he says, people coming up to me and saying, hey, Big Daddy, do the job at the Garden. Hey, Kevin, doing the job at the Garden.
You did the opposite of doing the job.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I'll do the opposite of the job. How's that for you?
Yeah, still a heel, we just don't know it.
It was just a bit rambly, everything he said.
Well, I think the first clue that Vince wrote this promo for him is that Kevin Nash in 1994 quoted Jackie Gleason.
Yeah, that was it. When he said to quote Jackie Gleason, how sweet it is. That's very Vince. Very Vince.
It's like, next you're going to do Milton Berle references. How's that? The kids will love it.
I know the kids so well.
I'm sure Texaco Stars Theater still does good in the ratings.
Kev's out there going, and to quote Tiny Tim, I'm going to tiptoe through the tulips. Cool job, Kev.
He's hip. The kids love him. Now, Tom, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. From what we've seen in 1994 from Kevin Nash, what did he do at the Royal Rumble? Do you remember?
Eliminated lots of people.
Yes, 7 in a row, in fact. Mm-hmm. Do you recall what he did at King of the Ring?
He had a long match with Bret Hart, and some may say had Bret Hart beat.
Correct. Almost won the world title that night. Mm-hmm. What did he just do at Survivor Series?
Eliminated a lot of people.
Yes, he almost ran the table on Razor's team. Mm-hmm. While all teammates stood on the apron and cheered. Now, with all that in mind, it's pretty apparent that Kevin Nash is a killing machine on the level of The Undertaker. Is that fair to say?
Very fair to say.
Okay. Then why is he admitting that if Backlund had got the chicken wing on him, that he might have been in trouble?
It's ridiculous. He should never even insinuate it. Like, okay, I get it. You don't want to bury the chicken wing. Just don't say it.
It's like, well, if Bob had gotten a hold on me, I might have been in trouble. I will admit that. It's like, you're 7 feet tall, 330 pounds. You killed him in 8 seconds.
It was a line that just didn't suit the situation.
And he's talking about how he wants to be a fighting champion in Bret's mold. It's like, you should kind of stand alone, shouldn't you? I mean, I realize they are building something with him and Bret. I get that. But there's got to be a better way to phrase all this stuff.
It's just the fact that we're just suddenly accepting, oh, he's a good guy now. Like, the Diesel a week ago wouldn't have thought like this. The Diesel a week ago would have gone, Backlund, you idiot. You ain't getting anything on me. And Bret, he was weak. I'm the best. That would have been so much better.
He should still have some snarling Neanderthal qualities instead of all of a sudden being Mr. Articulate.
Yeah, he needed to have an edge to him. But they were just, as you say, just so desperate to have that saccharine top-level guy, that Hogan for the 90s, that... Unfortunately, like they did, that was what they did with Luger. They put him in Hogan's suit, didn't work, and they're just doing it with Diesel. It's a poison chalice at this point. It's like, if you just let these guys be and just trust their process, you might make a million times more money. But that's not going to happen, and this is a bit of an issue that comes about today, in the sense that you don't trust the guys in the locker room to make their own calls and to be who they are. You have to still have control of everything that comes out of their mouths. But despite the fact despite the fact that the proof is so in the pudding that the greatest stars in wrestling are the ones that didn't have lines written for them, that didn't have every step choreographed for them, the ones that went away and did their own thing, that controlled their own narrative, they're the ones that actually became big stars in the business. Maybe the issue here is that they became such big stars that they went and did something else. So Vince is upset with that. I'm thinking more Vince of 2020 rather than Vince of 94. But with the idea that if he gives them too much slack on the leash, that they're going to be too good and they're going to leave him. So whether it's that controlling element of them, but either way, it's we're going too deep into the weeds here. I think that I think Nash, if Nash had just been left to be Nash a little bit more, maybe without the backstage dickery, could have made them a lot of money. Could have brought in the Attitude Era years before.
Let's just be happy that Vince doesn't have control of MJF.
Oh God, could you imagine?
Because MJF might have finished his promo on Wednesday by saying, "On lives the new generation of the World Wrestling Federation." Yeah! Like Nash did. Make sure you hit the yeah really hard there, Kev. That was the in the words of the angry video game nerd, that was the cherry on top of the diarrhea shake.
That's a great quote.
That was not Kevin Nash's finest promo by any means.
No, was not his finest hour.
To put it, and it's unfortunately they're not gonna help Kevin find his voice much during this reign, and it's sad to say. Mm. But you know, you reap what you sow.
Yes.
Next week's episode of Raw: Jeff Jarrett versus the British Bulldog in a match that is actually oddly significant.
Oh.
A match that will prove historic and with a little bit of hindsight, because it may feature somebody's first appearance with the company.
Oh, well, that's a tease. Yeah,
we see somebody come in that may be a little bit polarizing in this present day, but it's ultimately a very important part of WWF history. Until then, we have Heavenly Bodies versus Gary Scott and Buck Quartermain. You were going to say something?
No. I'm intrigued for next week because I have no idea what this is going to lead to.
Oh, you'll see. The minute you see him, you'll know.
Okay.
So we got Heavenly Bodies versus Gary Scott and Buck Quartermain in the 950 death slot. Buck's a Florida mainstay who actually did some appearances for TNA in 2005, including a few pay-per-view dark matches.
He's this quite match, significant, course, yeah. He's quite prolific in this particular role.
Yeah, Buck had a pretty good had a pretty decent career for an enhancement guy, all things considered.
And it's quite nice in this match. He's in there with the guy that trained him,
Dr. Tom,
Jimmy Del Rey.
Oh, I knew it was one or the other.
Trained by the Gigolo in '91.
How about that?
Following a run in the Canadian Football League.
I assume it's probably the bodies that gave him the ride up.
I imagine it probably was. He certainly would have been Italian Stallion.
a little bit different. So Backlund arrives during the match. This match is just a backdrop for Backlund to rant and rave on commentary. He vows to overcome. He vows to recover from the adversity. And he begins by no-selling all of Waller's jokes completely. One thing I love about Bob so much is that he never seemed to, like, interact with people. Everyone was just, like, noisy background to him that he kind of just, like, acknowledged with, like, a look and then he'd look away. It's hard to imagine Bob sitting there, like, having, like, a real conversation with somebody, like, a back and forth.
It's interesting, and I like it, because there is this weird glint in him at the moment where I almost feel intimidated by the way that he is here. There is an eerie calmness to Backlund,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that he just lost the WWF title in quick order in the grand scheme of things. Like, there's an eeriness to him that I'm very intrigued by.
Well, he's still very perturbed by the whole thing, obviously. I did love when the Observer, when Meltzer called him based on his bow tie and suit, his nutty professor look, as I'm picturing Bob Backlund going, Glavin.
Really?
Well, I mean, I kind of see it, but he doesn't have the bowl cut or the glasses to be the nutty professor, but yet I can still kind of see it, though.
Okay.
I think it's more Howdy Doody meets Pee Wee Herman, but that's beside the point.
Either way, it's a strong look.
It is. So, Backlund says being humble got him nowhere, so he changed. He's going to bring morality back to the world. He says Diesel is a Neanderthal. And he says, in this modern world, and this is a borderline quote here, children are throwing people out of windows. Mothers are killing their children. He says this.
It's a great line.
Bob Backlund's the most interesting announcer this company's ever had.
if we were still doing the scale, he would have shot up there in this short appearance.
It would have exploded. If Bob Backlund had a pamphlet, I'd read it. I'm hoping this is just a work. I'm hoping he doesn't actually have these thoughts.
Well, I just don't know. I just know I find him very intimidating.
Meanwhile, in the background, the bodies are hitting these cool tandem moves on poor Gary Scott, including Pritchard suplexing Del Rey onto him via an assisted moonsault, which is a pretty cool-looking move.
That was
He did compare his loss to Diesel to a crisis. He used the word crisis. The body's finished with a Vegematic while Backlund is... Backlund informs us he has studied Diesel. He knows his mother's name. He knows his birthday. These are important things to know when you're scouting someone.
Well, I feel like if you know the birthday of the guy's mum, you can just shout, oh, look out, it's May the 9th. And you go, what? How did you... And then you've got the mental game. You've got the mental high ground immediately.
Oh, for sure. He's like an assassin.
Yeah, definitely.
He's like Leon the Professional. So the promotional consideration ad cuts Bob off, which is very, very rude, even though it is for the Raw video game. So then we come back to all the guys at the desk, and Vince forces Backlund to watch that match footage of him losing to Diesel again, which is just ignorant. And McCall, the man was traumatized by his loss. Don't rub it in his face. But then Backlund, in a moment that I'm sad never came to pass, he vows to procure the chicken wing on Vince.
Oh, now that is a match I'd like to see, thank you, please. Because they do this. They seem to have fun teasing stuff with Backlund that they're not going to pay off. Like, Backlund and Savage had a little thing very briefly, and then Savage left.
Mm-hmm.
They just like teasing stuff that's not going to happen.
So, there is a chicken wing cock tease joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going to make it. Get it, because they're poultry puns.
I'm with you. I remember that.
And we're still very crestfallen by Backlund's title loss after just 3 measly days. And I think it's time for our good friend Strummerwitz to really sum up the sadness we're feeling for Backlund's immense loss.
Goodbye, title reign. Though we hardly saw you at all, you had a way of charming us with words we never heard. Funny words like plebeian. We wondered if you were insane, if your bump caught at its fill, and you were bound for the drain. And it seems this transitional rain was like a candle in the wind, never had a chance to shine. Diesel did you in. And I would have liked to have seen it. It lasted just 3 days. Missed it cause I'm a Lamb fan. Also missed the replay. Mr. Backlund rose, an unlikely star in 94, battling the whole new generation, got the chicken wing in store. And then you got the shot on a cold November Eve. Procured the hold on to Brett, giving us a champion, which I believe. And it seems this transitional rain is like a candle in the wind. Never had the chance to shine. Diesel, did you win? And I would have liked to have seen it. It lasted just 3 days. I missed it cause I'm a Labs fan. Also missed the replay. By tidal rain, though we hardly saw you at all, you had a way of charming us with words we never heard. Funny words like plebeian, we wondered if you were insane, if your bump card had its fill and you were bound for the train. And it seems this transitional rain is like a candle in the wind. Never had a chance to shine. Diesel, did you win? I would have liked to have seen it. It lasted just 3 days. I missed it cause I'm a Labs fan. Also missed the replay. Na, 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 na. I missed it cause I'm a Labs fan. Also missed the replay.
I grew up with Elton John, not actually with him, but his music playing in our house, and I think Stromowitz did Reg Dwight justice there. It was stunning.
A little bit of Philadelphia freedom from a kid from Michigan.
Oh, love it, love it. Thank you, Stromowitz. At SZuma4?
Yes.
Look at that. What a guy. Thank you, Stromowitz.
So on next week's show, we have... Jarrett versus Bulldog, as noted earlier. We have the encore presentation of Survivor Series tomorrow night. Save your money. And we close with just this slow-mo shot of Diesel posing before the crowd because the king is dead. Long live the king.
Just keep on keeping on. This is it.
Get used to him holding that belt. You're going to see it for the next year.
This year he's the leader of the new generation, so I'm not surprised.
And he's going to Pied Piper's way into Atlanta in about 18 months.
Wow. Gosh. This is actually the beginning of the new generation era proper, isn't it? This feels like a real watershed moment in our timeline.
Yeah. It is, because this is a really forcible attempt to get somebody over as the top guy, somewhat out of nowhere, as we've said. And they stick with him. 95 is defined by Diesel's reign, which was a flop, and you can't really say it was all his fault because he wasn't put in the best position to succeed given some of his opponents that he had, some of the stories he was in, the dearth of talent on the roster as a whole, the show as a whole really began to fall apart. And unfortunately, the guy who's holding the belt at the time is the one holding the bag. And Nash gets blamed for a lot of it, which I feel is very unfair.
Well, we are going to be dissecting this entire run as it plays out on Monday Night Raw week by week, as we have been doing. And I'm intrigued to see sort of how the percentage falls as to who was to blame for this. How much of this was down to Big Daddy Cool? How much of this was down to the company? We will find out.
I know it's fun to blame the clique for everything because they may have politic, but they can't work miracles, can they?
Absolutely not, no. And until the next time we wave our magic wand and work a miracle on your podcast feed, he is at JRHWriting on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. We will speak to you next week. Don't forget to join us. That wasn't COVID. Jemmy just breathing too heavy. I'm keeping that in. Love you. Good. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news.
Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.